Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
And get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
All right, it's Thursday night. Nathan with you here until 10 o'clock on Off the Ball, and we have got a packed show for you this evening. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we will hear from Ian Wright and Saul Campbell in the latest of our remote roadshows with Cadbury FC. I sat down with them yesterday for a couple of hours. It is going to be up on all our social channels very soon. And we're going to play you some of the best bits of that between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock this evening. No shortage of brilliant football commentary this evening. We're also going to hear from John Giles from 7:30 on the opening weekend of the Premier League season. And Mark Tighe, one of the authors of Champagne Football, John Delaney and the Betrayal of Irish Football, is going to join us on the football show from 9 o'clock. There's also live action at the moment. AC Milan, Zlatan Ibrahimovic are in town and they've just kicked off against Shamrock Rovers, scoreless, 2.5 minutes gone at an empty Talis Stadium, but we'll be across to Stephen Doyle from there in just a moment. And Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry have both made quick starts to the US Open at Winged Foot. We will be across that for the evening as well. So there's lots going on. 53106 is the text number at Off the Ball on Twitter. Richie McCormick is with us as always. Evening, Richie.
Nathan, how are you?
And Joe Malloy is there as well in some beautiful sunshine, it looks like. Did you get a sunlight or something put in over the last couple of days?
No, I got the last of the evening sun out here over my left-hand side. It's very nice.
Glorious. It's a real dual screen kind of evening. You got Rovers on one side, then you got Shane Lowry, back-to-back birdies to start at the US Open. What's a nice evening ahead?
Yeah, I mean, the Rovers game, very interesting, just kicked off. And then the US Open, been watching a little bit of it. I'm sure Richie will give you the more details in a moment. But Justin Thomas is the leader in 5-under. Patrick Reed, 4-under. But then McIlroy, 3-under, Nathan. And, you know, for I don't know how long now, he's made bad starts to majors. And anytime he's won a major, he's been either the leader or within a shot of the lead after the first day. He's someone who thrives on being in the mix. So within two shots of the lead is more than acceptable. Certainly the course didn't play as tough as everybody was foreseeing. You know, the greens were very receptive. They weren't as fast as they might be in June. And obviously the players hit the ball a lot further than the last time they were all at Winged Foot in 2006. So McIlroy played really well, drove the ball beautifully. Mm. One or two errant wedge shots and he paid for them. But he drove the ball fantastically well, which is what you need to do on this course in particular. And then, as you mentioned, Shane Lowry is just off. He's 2-under through two, which is quite the start. Tiger Woods plus 3. He's finished his round. He just he had some moments, but he struggled. But it was a really good first day, and that's a very tidy leaderboard thus far with a lot of the bigger names going out now.
Yeah, Tiger had a bit of a collapse over the last couple of holes. He duffed a chip shot on 17 and then had a double bogey on 18. He got himself to 1-under at one stage and it all just fell apart. The expectation, Joe, was that this might be carnage. They were looking at the rough as usual the week of a US Open, and it's 3-4 feet long and all the caddies are dropping the ball in. You can't find it. This is going to be 7 or 8 over par. Last time it was at Winged Foot in 2006. The last day was just this car crash, 5 over par for Jeff Ogilvy wins it. Phil Mickelson feels he should have won it. Colin Montgomery feels he should have won it. Patrick Harrington probably should have won it. If he'd parred the last 3 holes, he would have won it. But actually, it's been quite straightforward today. The conditions are benign, the greens are soft, and scoring is far lower than anyone would have expected.
Yeah, well, all of the players in their press conferences, we were asked on kind of Tuesday and yesterday, will an under par score win here? And all of them said no, which is interesting. They all thought that it would be, you know, par would be a great score and, you know, over par could win this tournament. It would seem they overnight gave the rough a trimming. I mean, only a trimming, by the way. There's some horrific lies in there. And they didn't touch, though, the rough around the greens. I mean, there have been some just mad moments, like Morikawa from around the green, you know, it took a swipe at a ball to get it on the green and it moved about 3 feet into a bunker right in front of him. So, like, there's still a real jeopardy out there. Still very, very difficult. You know, it's just these guys are all so good. They can all hit the ball 300 plus yards now, straight as you like when they're playing well. The greens, as I said, are receptive. They hold some putts. You know, suddenly you can see how a 65 is out there. But interestingly, like, you're right, it wasn't what any of the players were expecting on Tuesday and yesterday when they were speaking. So, you know, we'll see how things go. If there's one thing we can trust, Nathan, it's that the USGA won't like five under on day one, and they're going to bring some nasty stuff over the next couple of days, and we'll have complaints.
Yeah, there did seem to be a sense that maybe the first two rounds they might go easy on them, because if it was so difficult, play would be so slow that everybody might actually get finished for the first 2 days. So they might give them a bit of leeway today and tomorrow, and then the carnage can begin over the weekend. Richie, I know what you're thinking. It's Thursday, we're talking golf, and we haven't even given it the plug yet. But don't worry, Richie.
No, Golf Weekly. It's
never out of date. The level of discussion is of such a high quality that even though it is based around the US Open, you can go back to it anytime. We had Ronan Flood on Golf Weekly today, Padraig Harrington's long-term caddy, and he was brilliant talking about so many of the players they've come up against and like the experiences he's had in his life of walking down an 18th fairway alongside Tiger Woods contending for tournaments. So he was absolutely brilliant to talk to him today. And of course, Padraig Harrington's back. The Irish Open is on next week. But Richie, you'll be glad to know we can't go. Goddamn
COVID. That's terrible.
So no junket for us this year, Joe.
Richie, you're going instead.
We've all suffered, but Jesus, now things have gone too far. Level two, level three. We can't even go to the bloody golf. It's an absolute disaster.
Listen, I'm more dedicated than the rest of you. I covered Olympic golf, so I've kind of seen the cold face.
Oh, that's true. That is true. That was tough going. Let's go to Tala. There's nearly 8 minutes gone. Shamrock Rovers against AC Milan. Stephen Doyle is watching. What's happening, Steve-o?
How you doing, Nathan? Well, what's happening at the moment really is AC Milan have been dominating possession for these first 8 minutes. No real chance of note. There was one moment there with Salamaker, who was the only change for AC Milan from their last competitive fixture, which was against Cagliari at the end of the Serie A season at the beginning of August. But Salamaker set up on the edge of the box and he went to shoot him. It was a real team coming in all pre-season, because he just got a kick and air shot. Looked pretty ridiculous, to be honest. And so that was just kind of bobbled off out of play, safety enough for Shamrock Rovers. But it's been a real siege on the Shamrock Rovers box. They, of course, have their last game is against Cork City at the weekend. They've made two changes. Joey O'Brien is in for the suspended Liam Scales. No surprise there. And Neil Ferrugia starting on the left wing instead of Danny Lafferty, who has been in really good form of late, and I thought he would start. He would be a real threat for Rovers down that left-hand side. But it is Ferrugia, and from an attacking point of view, Rovers haven't had a chance really to get out of their own half. It's been all AC Milan. There's a couple of nice moments from Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Lee Grace, though, handled him well there a couple of minutes ago, and he tried to get on the attack, managed to get the ball off, but then fired a pass back to Alan Manis, the Shamrock Rovers goalkeeper. He just managed to keep it in play, but then Grace got the ball back and had to put it out for a throw-in. I think AC Milan definitely came with the plan, Nathan, to attack and try to get an early goal and put Rovers under real pressure.
Yeah, because Rovers, during the week, spoke about trying to express themselves and do what they would do in the League of Ireland and get on the ball and take advantage of the fact there might be a little bit of ring rustiness in that AC Milan side. Do they look like a team, Rovers, in actuality tonight, that are sitting back, that look comfortable in the knowledge they're not going to see much of the ball?
Yeah, well, look, I think Stephen Bradley did say that in fairness as well, that he had to understand, or that the players had to understand, that, you know, they're used to going playing League of Ireland matches and being in control of possession for 60-70% of matches. But he did say that, you know, AC Milan were going to be that team tonight, and that Rovers have to learn how to deal with that. Now, they have dealt with that so far. But as we know, Nathan, you know, every team has their purple patches. It doesn't matter what the cap and standard is between sides. Every team has their purple patch, and Rovers are going to get, you know, whether it be 5, 10, 15 minutes of this first half where they control possession, because, you know, and I suppose it is a case of as well just trying to keep AC Milan out for as long as possible, even if you can get the half-time scoreless. And then you will be hoping that, you know, Rovers' fitness banked up till now, because they have been playing competitive football for longer than AC Milan over the last couple of months, that their fitness may work to an advantage for them in the closing stage of the game, last 15-20 minutes, and then AC Milan might start to tire out.
All right, we'll be back to Stephen throughout the evening. But 10 minutes gone, Shamrock Rovers nil, AC Milan nil, but AC Milan totally in control of the ball so far without creating any opportunities. It is the news round here on Off the Ball with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. 53106, the text number if you want to get in touch. Where are you starting, Richie?
In Andorra, there is another Irish side in action in Europe this evening. Inter de Scaldes are up against Dundalk in Andorra. And Dave McMillan gave Filippo Giovagnoli's side a 14th minute lead up there in the mountains. So Inter de Scaldes nailed Dundalk, won the latest score. Tottenham have really had an escape in Bulgaria. They fell behind with just 19 minutes to go away to Lokomotiv Plovdiv. But the Bulgarians then had a complete brain fart of the last 15 minutes, having two men sent off. And goals from Harry Kane, Antongi and Ndombele have seen Tottenham through to the third qualifying round of the Europa League. Very easy night's work for Rangers early on. They beat Lincoln Red Ibs by 5-0 in Gibraltar. Alfredo Morelos bagging two of those. And there's one other game involving an Irish side tonight as well. It's at 7:30 and sees Coleraine entertain Motherwell. Three games in the Carabao Cup second round this evening. The first one of them kicked off at 5:30 at Turf Moor. It's Burnley 1, Sheffield United 1. David McGoldrick, the Republic of Ireland striker, had given Sheffield United an early lead there inside the first 4 minutes, but Matej Vidra has levelled for the hosts midway through the second half. So with 7 minutes to go, it appears they are bound for penalties at Turf Moor. It's still Wolves nil, Stoke nil, 14 minutes in at Molineux, and there's a 7:45 start to the game at the Amex tonight, where Brighton are up against Portsmouth. Three games in the Carabao Cup, and then the third round draw will be finally complete. Away to Preston will be either Brighton or Portsmouth tonight.
All right, so there's a lot of live football going on. We'll keep you up to date with that throughout the evening. We'll have reaction from Tala as well on the football show after 9 o'clock. Still scoreless there. We'll talk to Mark Tye as well. Champagne Football, his new book about John Delaney's downfall, is in the shops today. John Giles at 7:30. After 8 o'clock, Joe, we have Saul Campbell and Ian Wright. I had the pleasure yesterday of spending a couple of hours in their company on Zoom, as is the way with our remote road shows now. And yeah, it was brilliant talking to the two of them, particularly about Ian Wright as a striker and how much of a nuisance he was and a pain, as Saul Campbell put it. Never shut up throughout the entire match, and sort of made his sledging a bit of an art form. And no matter what type of character you were, he had a way of approaching you. So the ultimate insult from Ian Wright's point of view was if he didn't say anything to you, if you weren't worthy of his abuse, if he didn't respect you enough, like the centre back would be wondering, where is it? Where is it? And how he would really get at people like Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, the ones who he felt he could unsettle. Ferguson hated him. Ferguson said he should have signed him probably at one stage. He was just so bloody volatile. He'd tell his players, stay as far away as possible because something bad is going to happen if you go near him. And yeah, he's just such an entertaining character.
Yeah, he's brilliant. I always remember the Schmeichel stamp as well. Mm. You know, him and Schmeichel had a thing going on for a while. A guy, he was a brilliant player. I mean, maybe, you know, you forget until certain Thierry Henry came along. He was their top scorer in their history. He was just
didn't
class.
Didn't sign until he was 28.
It's a complete fairy tale story. I mean, his whole career is. I mean, I remember he was in a couple of years ago, and I hadn't realized he'd got to a point where he, it was either one or two children at the time, and he was working in a job he hated. I think he was on a building site, and he was offered yet another trial, and he declined the trial and kept declining the trial. The club came back. It was three times, and his boss kind of said to him, "Why do you keep turning down these trials?" And he said, "I've done so many trials. They never had, you know, nothing comes of them." And the boss said to him, "Go and do the trial, and I guarantee your job. If you have to take off for a week or two, your job will be here waiting for you." And he said, "Right, okay, it's the bloody last time," kind of thing. And, you know, the rest is history. And I always think Wright as well, it's interesting. He had a bit of a renaissance in a way as a pundit, you know, like. Mm. By his own admission, he felt he was consigned a little bit to the role of jester, maybe because he had the personality to do it. And it's rare to have genuinely funny people on a panel, so why not make use of it? But he often felt that's what producers wanted from him. And he got to a point, I think he said it publicly about the BBC and didn't work with the BBC for a long time. But he said, I actually know about the game. I want to talk about the game. I'll have the fun as well. And he still does. And it's a really welcome thing on a panel. But he went and reinvented himself, and he would talk about how he spent, you know, a lot of time. He'd read Miguel Delaney, he'd read Henry Winter, he'd do his homework and really threw himself into it. And then, you know, lo and behold, he's everywhere now, not least at the BBC. So, like, he's a really kind of thoughtful, multifaceted character. I mean, you know, his Desert Island Discs. I hope he doesn't cry as much on this chat this evening.
There are no tears.
Desert Island
no
Discs.
Tears.
You know, like, He's wonderfully open kind of person. So I'm looking forward to it. And him and Sol Campbell's an interesting mix.
Yeah, because, well, they did play together for England. They never played together at Arsenal. Wright was gone 2-3 years, but Campbell's very good on Wright as the striker he faced in North London derbies. And in fact, in his first North London derby, Wright scores a winner 3 minutes from time where Sol Campbell is marking the post. And Wright just swings off at the right moment and gets the header in and wins it. So that's coming up between 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock. We'll have the best bits. And then you can watch the full thing tomorrow. It's going to be on all our social channels from 10:45. Gary has texted in, the US Open is a perfect tournament for golf Grinch Richie. The sound of golfers being tortured should be sweet music to him. No golf tournament is beautiful
them,
for Richie.
Them just not being on my telly. Them just not being on my telly would be class. But, you know, can't have it all.
Oh God. Shamrock Rovers have just had the best chance of the game. Very unlucky not to go in front against AC Milan. Jack Byrne playing a ball through the AC Milan defence. I think it was to Aaron Green, who shot from the left-hand side and full stretch. The goalkeeper managed to save for AC Milan. But in the last few minutes, Shamrock Rovers starting to see a little bit more of the ball, but it remains scoreless, 16 and a half minutes gone. How'd Sam Bennett get on today, Richie?
He did pretty well. Should just mention in the Pyrenees, just gone half-time, Dundalk leading Inter de Scalas by a goal to nil. Sam Bennett, a great day for him today. He now holds a 52-point lead in the green jersey with just three stages remaining of this year's Tour de France. The Carcon Sure Rider won today's intermediate sprint at M with Matteo Trentin second and Peter Sagan third. The stage itself was won by Mikhail Kwiatkowski, ending a poor run for Team Ineos. And Primoz Roglic retained his 57-second lead in the yellow jersey over Tadej Pogacar.
Richie, sorry to put you on the spot. Is a 52-point lead close to unassailable, or is it nothing?
It can be drawn back in. Like, for instance, there's 20 points essentially if you win one of these sprints. If Bennett is to have a mare somewhere along the line tomorrow and be nowhere for that first intermediate sprint, then you can see his lead hauled back in. And very much so then, I think tomorrow is heading towards a sprint finish as well. Tomorrow they're heading back onto kind of flat surfaces. So he can be hauled in, and there are points at stake on the final stage around the Champs-Élysées as well. So it's not unassailable yet. If he gets through tomorrow, we could start talking about it in that regard. But it's a very, very good lead to have with three stages remaining in the Tour de France. We've got an individual time trial on Saturday, then that ceremonial stage pretty much at the end where it's left to the sprinters, and Primoz Roglic or whomever can enjoy their champagne early on in that stage. But if he gets through tomorrow, Bennett, and if he picks up another couple of points, I think we can be talking about unassailable.
Yeah, well, we're keeping an eye on over the weekend. So the latest in the golf, Richie, you have the leaderboard. One of the great things about this as well, yeah, compared to the US PGA last month, is it's on the East Coast. So it's all going to be done by about 11, half 11 tonight. All the good stuff will be right there. 10 o'clock tonight. Sit down, relax. Sunday evening, you can get to bed at a reasonable time. Praise the Lord for that.
Yeah, 99 days to Christmas, and they're able to finish up early because it's getting dark. But Rory McIlroy, as you mentioned, in the clubhouse on 3 under par, really good day for him today, an opening round 67. Not so good for Graeme McDowell, 76. He's in the clubhouse on 6 over par. That bright start that you mentioned by Shane Lowry has been softened a little bit. He opened with back-to-back birdies. He's now put together back-to-back bogeys and is back to level par through his first four holes. James Sugrue, 2 over par, the amateur, through his first five today. The clubhouse lead at Wingfoot, held by Justin Thomas, a 65 for him today. He's 5 under par, one clear of Patrick Reed, who was helped in no end by a hole in one at the 7th today.
Patrick Reed didn't know the difference is the joke, because nobody applauded, but nobody would applaud it, even the Waz fans there.
Did you see
the reaction to his hole in one?
No.
So he's playing with Jordan Spieth, and there's obviously serious beef there. I mean, like, it was very muted.
Oh, really? So did Speed give him the high five?
No, not even. No, I mean, maybe. I mean, there's a degree of COVID, I'm sure, but we've seen hole-in-one since, and it's a bit, you know, it's a bit more celebratory. Like, it was just quiet, and like, to the point that nobody ran over to Reed, so he just kind of gave a doff of his cap, you know, like a thing, and walked back, and eventually there was kind of a fist bump. Oh, reach over to Jordan, fist bump, but like not much eye contact. So, you know, it was as hole in ones go, it was pretty joyless.
Were you feeling sorry for him?
Yeah.
I mean, he,
you know, for many, many reasons, probably even reasons I'm not aware of, he has made his own bed and he has to lie in it. But I'm always uncomfortable when I see someone publicly almost shunned like that. You know, it's awkward for him. It's not nice, but I got over it, you know.
We're short on time, so we can't really get into this. We'll have to come back to it. But Dave has texted in with his top five sledgers in sport. which we must do as a topic some night, could get controversial. Is
we probably pre-recorded Aussie cricketers.
Well, the first one is an Aussie cricketer, Shane Warne, yeah. Boston Celtics, okay. Larry Bird, Muhammad Ali, Brian Clough, and controversially, Brooks Koepka.
I would have just gone with like the Aussie youth cricket team of like the late 70s and early 80s, your Greg Chappells and so on, because they were utter bastards to their opponents, and it was great crack watching them. But it's a decent list.
You're not having Koepka, Joe?
I think Brian McMenamin deserves a slot in there ahead of Koepka, to say the least.
Absolutely. Like, Koepka isn't really sledging. Like, if, say, for example, in golf, Patrick Reed and Jordan Spieth, who, as you say, there is beef there, are walking down the fairway, and as Reed is walking down to pick up his ball, goes, geez, see the way I'm still in contention? Your game's gone to crap there, Jordan. There was a little bit of actual live interaction, but sort of calling someone out in a press conference, that's not really sledging.
No. It's golf sledging.
It's got to be in-game. Wright says the Keen would respond with a bit of back and forth when they were playing each other.
That doesn't shock me.
I was watching last night, I put this up on Twitter, I was watching another exciting night in the Murphy household, watching Liverpool-Nottingham Forest, which I still remember watching at the time because it was the first live game on Sky Sports, and I only watched about 10 minutes of it, and dear God, it was brilliant. Roy Keane nails Ronnie Whelan with an atrocious tackle right up on the knee, gets a yellow card for that. A minute later, sliding tackle on Mark Walters down the side, takes him out of it, definite yellow card, gets away with it. And then randomly, Stuart Pearce gets annoyed about something with Steve Nicol and literally tries to kick him up the hole, Bishop Brennan style, and misses right in front of the referee. And what happens? Just a quick word with Stuart Pearce. Off he goes. It was a brilliant game. Brilliant game, as Zlatan has just scored. Zlatan Ibrahimovic has just scored for AC Milan against Shamrock Rovers midway through the first half. Rovers had done quite well, as I mentioned. Aaron Green had a really good chance for them that was saved by the Milan goalkeeper. But Zlatan, who was the big attraction, all the paparazzi were around for the last couple of days. Rovers didn't clear the ball particularly well, and Zlatan, quick 1-2 in the edge of the area, brings it in, cutting in from the left-hand side, and just plays it low down to the left-hand angle of the goal, past Alan Manis, and AC Milan lead Shamrock Rovers by 1-0. So we'll be across to Stephen Doyle for that throughout the evening. We are done for time, lads. Richie, thank you.
Cheers, lads.
Joe, thank you as always. Enjoy the golf this evening.
Thanks. Evening, gents. Take care.
All right. So a lot more football to come, as I say. Sol Campbell and Ian Wright on the way after 8 o'clock on the football show. We'll have reaction to Shamrock Rovers and AC Milan. And we will also hear from Mark Tye about his new book, Champagne Football. But up next, as always, on a Thursday, it is John Giles.
The News Rant on Off the Ball.
With Gillette. We don't just play the game. We change it. Gillette. Made of what matters.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.